As the Northwest Arkansas region continues to grow, so do the number of cases that end up in court, which is why during the last legislative session, lawmakers approved an additional circuit court judge for both Washington and Benton counties, upping the number from 7 to 8 and from 6 to 7, respectively. Both of these new judges will be elected by voters this year, while existing circuit court judges are up for re-election. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Janine Perry, a political science professor at the University of Arkansas and director of the Arkansas Poll, about circuit and district court judgeships and why voters play an important role in their selection.
I've seen the signs. I'm sure you've seen the signs. And I'm willing to bet that some of our listeners have also noticed the signs in people's yards for district court and circuit court judges. So what is the difference between the two? Because they have very different jurisdictions.
Yes. The thing that most people will see on their ballots most frequently is what Arkansas calls a circuit judge. And those circuit judges are basically the generic label across any state would be their trial court judges. They're the kind of most front-facing level of judiciary in any state, or really, of course, at the national level, where they're called district courts, even though they're all trial courts. The nomenclature here is rough in a system as hyper-federated as the United States. But that's what most people will encounter. And we used to call them circuit judges and chancellors, and they were both serving at the trial court level, but we changed that in 2000. So that's what most people across most of the states, most of this state in election years, when you see circuit judge, it's just a trial court judge, which is what most of us are going to have, you know, significant interaction with in our lives if we have an interaction with the court system. If it's not a minor level thing, you know, sort of misdemeanors and maybe a property line dispute with a neighbor, you know, small claims court over a business contract gone bad. Those are all happening now in what we call a minor court level. That's the generic label. And technically now those have been, since we overhauled our judicial system in 2000, those are now what we call district judges. So I will say that for the circuit judges, the signs that people are seeing right now, I will add, they are still allowed specialties when they divide things up in their respective circuits. So there are some who specialize in juvenile justice, and those are the major cases that they take. There are others that specialize in criminal. There are others that specialize in administrative law, you know, sort of public agencies and regulations. So those specialties are good for judging and probably mostly for clients because they help judges develop expertise in really complex and important areas of the law. But they can add a layer of confusion to voters, because if they go to a forum at the library, or they're trying to read in the newspaper, you know, they're thinking, wait, who's running for circuit judge and who's running for juvenile judge? A juvenile judge is just a specialty inside the circuit court system, where there will be multiple ones. I hope that helps.
I think it does.
Probably people just need to see a chart on the office for the administrator of the courts, for the judicial department, right? The judicial branch of Arkansas. You can go there, and under sort of public information and who we are, you can find an organizational flowchart, and it's actually quite clean and comprehensible, and it'll show you the four levels and even, you know, sort of show you how those divisions are inside each level.
So these circuit court judges, where do they have jurisdiction?
They tend to be, or they're organized into circuits, and those circuits usually affect one county or multiple counties, depending on the size of the caseload, which, of course, is heavily tied to the size of the population. So, yes, they're organized into counties. But in more rural areas of Arkansas, which, of course, is a big swath of the state, you could have many counties all in one circuit.
And what about district judges? Is that sort of on a city level?
Yes. Traditionally, those minor courts. Again, in the nomenclature and the discipline, they would be called sometimes courts of limited jurisdiction or what are sometimes called boutique courts, which I think is really darling. It's sort of flip, but it's funny. Those were often situated inside cities, yes. There are a handful of those left that are sort of outside of the total restructuring that Arkansas did in 2000. That are still kind of city courts, but generally speaking, each county, we're very slowly moving toward each county having just one district court or one minor court. And, you know, there could be other offices, right, and other things that are happening, but we're trying to sort of move into that fourth layer, also being more consolidated and uniform across the state.
So unlike a lot of other races that will be happening this year, the judge races are one of the few that aren't partisan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They aren't partisan. And that just means they don't have party labels, of course, attached to them. You don't run as a Democrat or as a Republican. And there's an interesting legacy with that. Most of us, to the degree we think about judicial selection, that's what we would generically call it, how a judge becomes a judge and who gets to decide that, who gets to hire them essentially. Most of the time, to the degree Americans of any age and in any region think about that, we think about the federal court system and we think about presidential appointment and Senate confirmation. And every now and then in the news media, we are supplied with very high profile examples of a Senate Judiciary Committee conducting hearings, you know, on the nominee. And that kind of reinforces people's understanding of judges. But the reality is the majority of judges in the United States operate in state court systems, and the majority of those judges actually are elected. There are many forms of election, and it used to be the case that partisan election was a fairly common form, and then nonpartisan election was another common form. And then there's a third form of election, which is called a retention election. And that happens in about not quite half the states, but fully half of the states use election. And then it's sort of divided between partisan election and nonpartisan election. Arkansas used partisan election for most of its history. And of course, that inevitably, given Arkansas's history, meant that they were largely Democrats with a capital D. But in 2000, we moved toward a thing that the lawyer community, the legal community, had wanted for a long time, which was toward nonpartisan elections. So we stripped those positions of their party labels.
And I guess in my mind, that would make sense, right? Because a judge's job is to be impartial and mm-hmm. to make mm-hmm. decisions based on the case before them. So I guess in my mind, that makes sense.
It does to almost everyone. And I, of course, experience undergraduate college students the most, in addition to just citizens out in the public and the legal community and judges themselves, you know, definitely are enamored of the idea of justice as quote unquote blind, as impartial, you know, the scales of justice figure, you know, always wears the blindfold. And so identifying yourself with one of the major political parties or the other certainly seems to fly in the face of that. I will add, however, that political scientists have done a lot of research and have, for our disputes and our discipline, quite aggressively challenged the legal community on this point, because the consequence of taking those party labels off is that it depresses voter turnout quite significantly because we've lost our cue, our heuristic. And so we don't really know what those judges are about. And we would argue the reality is, and the research has shown for decades, that judges actually are partial to a particular way of viewing the role of government, and they're partial to a particular way of viewing human behavior, just as members of the legislative and executive branches are. So we would argue that it's more intellectually honest, if not as romanticized, to for judges to signal to people in that very broad way that while the cases that come before them, they will certainly hear all the facts and the evidence and the argument, and they will look to the law first, that they do have a particular philosophy that is toward, say, a larger scope and scale for government intervention or against a larger scope and scale for government intervention. some of the other things that people argue about that is that when you take party labels off, the candidates also lose a main source of financial support and organizing. And so one of the things we know, because these 50 states with all their many ways of putting judges in positions give us a laboratory of democracy, what we know is that candidates in nonpartisan judge states tend to have higher socioeconomic status winners. You have to have more money in order to run a successful campaign, or you have to be connected to people with more money. For us, it's kind of a balancing act between your perception of those judges if they have party labels, and then maybe the realities of life in a republic where people can and will use more information to inform their choices.
So why would you encourage people to pay attention to these races and to think about the people that they're electing to these positions?
Because they make decisions that significantly affect people, often at a vulnerable place in their lives. Some of these judges, I mentioned that inside a typical circuit, that you will have judges assigned to particular specialties, although they can overlap. So one who specializes in family law is where many Americans will find themselves in a case of a divorce, of a custody dispute. And there are, of course, people then who may end up in probate court over wills and property distribution. So while most of us encounter those situations only a couple of times maybe in our lives, they're really significant to us. And it's always struck me as a pretty terrible irony, I suppose, a tragedy almost, that most of us don't pay attention to it until our family arrangements and or our economic futures hang in the balance of someone we don't know and who's barely accountable to the community.
And how long does a circuit court judge stay in office once he or she is elected?
The circuit court judges retained a 6-year term. Appellate court judges and state Supreme Court judges have 8-year terms. So they are longer terms of office than your legislative or executive figure, although they're not life appointment like a federal judicial position. But remember, once we took the party labels off, incumbency then really becomes an even more powerful force. You get to run with the label judge or justice next to your name. And we know through experiments in other states that can give you at least a 5-point bounce in the polls because there's no other information available in a nonpartisan election. So once they win, their offices are their terms of office are longer than most of us expect. And then in addition to that, it's very likely they'll be reelected in those election states.
And how many terms can judges?
There's no limit.
Judges. So they can, so 6-year term after 6-year term, potentially.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we will see these judge candidates on the ballot in March, and then potentially some of them could end up being on the ballot in November.
Yes. And so when we reorganized all of that, we arranged it so that judges run with the partisan candidates in the typical spring primary election, even numbered year. And then if there's a runoff, the need for a runoff because a candidate doesn't get the majority. And, in one of these races, we have a five-way contest. So mathematically, that's more likely. Then the runoff happens in November with the general election rather than running it, 2 weeks later. That's an interesting irony, too, that political scientists have done some really interesting research on, because 2020, of course, is a presidential year, and that attracts the highest number of voters. But it also means it tends to attract more inexperienced voters. So those inexperienced voters end up facing these nonpartisan judicial runoffs when they really just came out for the presidential contest. So that's where we get this heightened phenomenon of what we call voter fatigue or ballot roll-off, which means that, I tend to be one of the handful of people voting by the time you get to the end of the ballot, because for a lot of those less experienced voters, only presidential contests are interesting enough, and high profile enough to pull them in and motivate them to appear at the polls. They're confused by that, and they tend to just skip those races. So it really, if you think about turnout of eligible voters being maybe 55 to 58% of the electorate, by the time you get to those what we call down ballot positions, you might only have basically half of the eligible electorate actually deciding those races. And it really gives the legal community that knows a lot about those races quite a lot of power, or other, you know, newspaper readers, Arkansas politics professors, that kind of thing. And maybe that's okay if you all trust our judgment.
Well, thanks for speaking with us today and walking us through these election processes.
Sure, I did my best. Thanks for asking me.
That was Janine Perry, a political science professor at the University of Arkansas and director of the Arkansas Poll, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek. Like circuit court judges, district court judges go through a primary on March 3rd and, if necessary, to a runoff in November.